to the latest developments now in the controversial start for Gore's new mayor. Ben Bell is the youngest mayor in the country perhaps ever, having narrowly defeated long-serving Mayor Tracy Hicks by 8 votes in October. But the start of his tenure has been met with challenge after challenge from his own council. Our Otago Southland regional reporter is RNZ's Tim Brown. Morning, Tim.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Goodness, it's been something of almost a daily soap opera in a way. A lot of stress on a new young mayor. But just explain a little bit more where things have got to and why.
Yeah, there has been nothing but controversy basically since Ben Bell took over the mayoral chains. In fact, it even started before he got the mayoral chains. He beat an 18-year incumbent in Tracy Hicks by just 8 votes, an incredibly tight margin of victory. That led Mr. Hicks to seek a recount for the election. That was ultimately unsuccessful, but it took about three weeks for a judge to come to that conclusion. So all the while, Gore was technically without a mayor. Then when the recount was dismissed, Bell had already appointed his own executive assistant, who was the partner of another councillor who ran on his Team Hokanui ticket during the election. She travelled with him to his mayoral training in Wellington. He tried to claim expenses for that, about $2,000 worth. However, that was voted down, and he ultimately accepted he would have to pay for that out of his own pocket. Then he sought to have his executive assistant, or an executive assistant, appointed to the mayor specifically. There is currently one shared between the mayor and the chief executive. This was also unsuccessful, with councillors voting it down at the first meeting of the Gore District Council. They said it was a luxury item, that it couldn't be justified in the current climate, especially when he was a back-to-basics mayor. That's what he campaigned on when running for the job. Then his choice of deputy became a controversy, because now a majority of councillors, 7 of the 10 councillors, that's not including the mayor or deputy obviously, put a requisition letter to the chief executive seeking to oust his choice of deputy mayor. What followed then was the mayor holding a mayoral retreat in Cromwell the weekend before last, in a hope to bring the council together, to get them on board and going forward together. It was boycotted by some councillors, as I'm led to believe from the council, they are yet to see all the expense claims related to that retreat. And just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, then Stuff has also reported last night that the mayor's new proposed committee structure could add an additional $140,000 to $300,000 of costs to the council's annual budget. So it's all going on down there.
It's trying to work out what's going on. Obviously, there's one perspective that this is a long-serving council. It's had a long and respected incumbent mayor, and a new and very young person has come in, and there's just a little bit of resistance to some of what's proposed. Do we use the word factions, or are they legitimate issues that are being raised? How are we interpreting what's happening?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult to read the room at the moment. I mean, there was always going to be some upset within the community, if not the council, about the fact that Tracy Hicks didn't win the election, especially when it was so tight and so close. And of course, the seeking of the recount added another layer to that. There was about 150 blank votes that he said he just wanted to check whether they were actually blank, whether that wouldn't change the result at all. And of course, when there's only an 8-vote margin, it only takes a change to 4 votes to potentially flip that result. So there are some around the council table who say that the whole controversy here is that there's a faction who didn't want Tracy to lose, they're upset about it, and they're basically throwing their toys out of the cot. Now, I've had a chance to speak to some of those councillors, and they say that's not at all what's happening here. We have concerns about the direction of the council. We want to make sure that every decision that's made is made in the best interests of council, and that's where their resistance is coming from. They're not sure that the deputy choice is the right one to lead the council through these next 3 years, especially when guiding such a young mayor.
That's, you know, a legitimate point to be made, but something like the retreat in Cromwell, it wasn't exactly Waiheke Island, wasn't it? And, you know, I the memorable line, it's an insult to the Matara Licensing Trust. Fair point on one hand, maybe you should have stayed local, but not going to it? Like, you know, it's one thing to be annoyed about it and perhaps to have words with the mayor about it, but to not go?
Yeah, it's not a great look, is it? But I guess that again comes down to the fact that if you try to organise a weekend away with 12 people, the chances that they'd all be able to make it, I suppose, would be slim. It's just in the current climate surrounding that council, it's not a good look, and that's the greater issue. I think when you speak to people on the inside, they say there actually isn't all this chaos that's projected. That's just the light that's cast on the council at the moment. It looks chaotic, it looks dysfunctional, but it's just people trying to get their heads around what will be a new structure and a new way forward with this now potentially historically young mayor at the helm.
Really interesting times. Thank you. Now, Queenstown's housing woes, and anecdotally and beyond, it's just, what, getting worse and worse?
Yeah, I mean, this is a story I've been covering in my entire time here at RNZ over the past 5 years, but every time I go back to talk to locals about the housing market, they always say it's worse and it's getting worse still, which is the greater shock. The fact that a place that has always been one of the least affordable, well, not always, but in the past 2 decades has been one of the least affordable places in New Zealand, seems to become increasingly and more rapidly more unaffordable. I've spoken to vulnerable migrant workers who are the ones who are really being squeezed by this, and we call them migrant workers, but many of them have permanent residency, and a lot of the ones that don't are on the path to permanent residency. So they are migrant workers, but they are New Zealanders as well. These people have been living here for years. And the big issue here is that it seems to be, now that the borders are open, many houses that were, it was more economical to have them leased out to locals, it now makes sense to return them to the Airbnb market, because the average room cost apparently is around about $400 a night. And when you think that rentals are starting at $800 a week, and that's the starting level for a 3 or 4 bedroom rental, you can see the economics of $400 a night works out in the favour of the owner of the home. And that's where the problem seems to lie, talking to those on the ground.
So are there any efforts to try and address things? Obviously, there's already a labour crisis. Now we've got tourism ramping up again. Is there any kind of... has anyone got a plan here?
Well, this is the kind of thing that the council has tried to tackle on multiple fronts in the past, and we've seen councils, I guess, go into battle with Airbnb, and they've come out on the losing side generally. The idea at the last council was to put in a bed tax on short-term accommodation in the hopes of at least getting some funding that they could put into more infrastructure to allow, I guess, greater intensification of housing. That had to be put on the back burner due to the pandemic as well. So now that we're at this situation where they're looking at inclusionary zoning. And what's inclusionary zoning? Essentially, it means that when a development is put forward to the council, the developer has to commit to creating a certain number of affordable homes within that development, or gifting a certain sum of money to the local Queenstown Lakes Community Housing Trust to enable them to make affordable housing at that development. So will this pass? I mean, it's tough to know. It's going to be debated, and it will be a point of contention whichever way it goes over the next few years. But the one thing that cannot remain is the status quo. A place where a 3 or 4 bedroom home now starts at $800, and it's very common to see them more $1,200 plus, where a single bedroom home is $500 a week, and often these are single bedroom attached flats rather than homes. And an environment where landlords will list at one price, see the huge demand for the home, and then raise the price, the weekly rental price, within hours to accommodate for that demand, that can't persist.
It's an extraordinary story, this, and pretty gutting, really. Do we know any more about the missing royal albatross eggs at Tairua Head?
Yeah, this is still the mystery that cannot be answered. I mean, this is an awful story. 4 royal albatross eggs went missing about 3 weeks ago. They were only discovered as rangers went on a routine walkthrough, found the eggs missing, no sign of them, which leads them to believe that the one thing they can rule out is that a predator wasn't involved. They're not going to pick up 4 eggs and take them away somewhere more comfortable for consuming them, so there would be evidence that a predator was involved. So there are suggestions that a thief or thieves may have used a boat to get to the colony, but that's also an incredibly bizarre set of circumstances, because however they got there, it wouldn't have been an easy path, and these weren't the first eggs they would have come across while entering the colony. So it's with the police, it's with the Department of Conservation, but as yet there are no answers.
All right, and just I mean, extraordinary to know what you would do. I don't know whether there's a black market, a smuggling market or something that might be an hypothesis.
Well, I mean, that has been weighed up, but it would all be speculation. It's not common that people collect eggs in this way in this day and age. There was a time during colonial times where people would collect eggs to put them on display. I mean, you can go to any museum and see that kind of thing. But since the times of I guess, going to Africa and shooting a large animal simply so that you can mount it in your house. Since that has passed, and it is mostly passed, I mean, there's a niche market for that still, so too is this business of egg collecting. So it's definitely suspicious.
Just finally, we're still celebrating the wonderful event that was the Women's World Cup and the Black Ferns win, and I guess that's morphing into Christmas now. Are people finding themselves in demand for appearances?
Yeah, that's right. Black Fern Amy Du Plessis, she played in the centres during the World Cup. She featured in Invercargill Santa Parade at the weekend, complete with a Black Fern themed float and her winner's medal. Amy Du Plessis is a hero of the South. She was born in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, but her family immigrated and settled in Invercargill when she was young, when she was about 7 years old. She was a key part of the Southern Girls High School rugby team's success, and helped them win their first national top four title in 2016. She went on to debut for the Otago Spirit in 2018, and more controversial for people in the South, she moved to Canterbury in 2021, but she's still a local hero, and she was celebrated at the weekend during that Santa Parade.
Oh, bloody Canterbury, they're always sucking everyone else's talent away. Thank you, Tim Brown, Otago Southland reporter.